So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, you take a look at all the things we have right now at our beck and call. We have online shopping, food delivery right to your doorstep, smartphones. Those, just a few of the ways that society has become much more, maybe you call it efficient, with its time. Back in the 19th century, life was very different, and there was a lot of hard work just to survive. And I'm really happy to have back Kathleen Ernst to talk with us about that. She is the author of many books. The one we're talking about today is titled A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Season. And her book features some beautiful photography, along with some beautiful writing, as a matter of fact. Beautiful photos from the Old World Wisconsin Museum in Eagle, Wisconsin. Lloyd Heath, a very well-known and noted photographer, who spent a lot of his from Washington, isn't he? The state of Washington?
He has roots here in Wisconsin, but he's lived on the West Coast for many years.
Yeah, and has spent many, 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 many days and months, I would think, at Old World Wisconsin to put together the unbelievable photos. And what is the book and the photos, what do they depict? Well, the way pioneers lived life back in those days. Folk traditions, chores, and a whole lot more. And Kathleen Ernst, it's so great to have you back.
I'm delighted to be here.
Always fun to talk with you. You may have some questions about Old World Wisconsin, or maybe about Midwest pioneer life, or maybe you've even got some stories from your own family's background when they are first arrived, some of their relatives first arrived, maybe back in the 19th century. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Kathleen, I kind of understand, I'm sure I know why in many ways you were interested in doing this book, but tell us how it sort of evolved.
Well, it really has very old roots. I moved to Wisconsin in 1982 specifically to take a job at Old World Wisconsin. It is such a special place, and I wanted to be a part of it. So I worked there for 12 years as an interpreter and later as a curator. And after I moved on, I found that some of the stories of immigrants really just stayed with me. Those are stories that have relevance for almost everyone. And so I kept returning to the theme of immigration in some of my other writing and other things that I did. And then a few years ago, this book proposal was actually written by a colleague and very good friend of mine, Marty Perkins, who dedicated his entire career to Old World Wisconsin. And after he passed away, I had the great honor of stepping in and taking the project from there.
Yeah, and it's a lovely book and lovely photography. And as I said earlier, lovely writing.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a storyteller at heart, so that's what I tried to do.
And it was really fun to read those pieces. And so you've got the book kind of organized by the seasons.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's several cycles here. In its simplest form, the book is organized by season, and I write an introductory essay, and then there are photos and captions and quotes that help tell the story of what rural settlers and settlers in small towns were doing in broad terms as the seasons passed. And then as I thought about that when I was just first conceptualizing how I would move into that, it made me think about also the cycle in broad terms that most immigrants go through, mm-hmm. From starting as new arrivals with almost nothing in most cases, and the cycle that they experienced as they get their feet on the ground and hopefully do well and grow and thrive here in the new world. So both of those cycles are sort of reflected in the organization of the book.
Oh, and I really enjoyed the writing and well, obviously the writing and the photos that go so well with what you're writing about. Oh, my goodness.
That was one of the great joys for me, because I've never worked on a book that was so visual. You know, Usually I have to paint pictures with words. And Lloyd Heath, the primary photographer, gave me a database with over 4,000 of his photos when I was beginning. And I did my research and developed the essays and thought about what stories I wanted to tell and what stories Old World Wisconsin visually could help tell. And then I had the great fun of spending hours in his database. And what I love about Lloyd's photos, certainly some of them I could say, well, I want to look for a photograph of a woman spinning wool, and I could find that at a task. But many of his photos have a distinct mood. They're very evocative.
Yes.
They suggest a great deal more than what's literally visible in the photograph. And that was particularly satisfying to me if I had perhaps a quote from an immigrant who was talking about feeling lonely or something like that, finding just the right photograph to pair with some of those ideas.
You know, and I was going to comment on that because I really loved your selection of quotes and the fact that you had so many that that really helped to move the story along.
Well, with this kind of project, I really feel it's important and most effective to let people tell their own stories. So It was wonderful to dig into the accounts, diaries, letters, reminiscences that people wrote late in life, interviews that people sometimes had when they were late in life in their own community and being honored as a first settler. And almost always the words that they used, I wouldn't have been able to tell the story better. So my job was really to weave all that together, I think.
Kathleen Ernst, our guest today, as we talk with her about her book, A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Seasons, and it's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press, too, which I was really kind of glad to see.
I'm so proud, to be affiliated with the press.
Oh, yeah, it's a wonderful press, and so I was really happy to see that. And again, you may have questions or maybe experiences to share from your family. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Again, you can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And like right off the bat in the book, you're talking about the German families and the various families that are picking up from and taking off, and they don't know what.
Right. It's hard for us to even imagine today, as you said in your introduction. We are so used to, you know, being global and having access to information. And these people were making life-altering decisions, enormous gambles, if you will, based on maybe perhaps some letters that were sent back from the first people to leave their village. And I can picture them spending the winter debating, discussing, should we go, should we not go? What can we fit in our trunk? What can we travel with to start our whole new life here? And every person that came here is a unique story. They all had stories. And so many of them are lost, and that's why it's so important to save the ones that are still existing.
And, you know, as you point out at some point in the book that 1836, we had a population of about 11,000 people in the state of Wisconsin. And that's 1836. And then we got to go 14 years later, 1850, and we've got 305,000.
Yes. It's astonishing to think how many people were pouring in to Wisconsin and the upper Midwest in that time.
And I think it's so interesting that of that 305,000, only about 30,000 of them lived in cities.
Yes. At this time, the vast majority of people were rural. And certainly when people came into Wisconsin, many stopped at Milwaukee, for example, and certainly some stayed. But most people were looking for land. And these are people who, in the old country, especially in Europe, were farmers on very poor land or very little land, and so the promise of agricultural land here in Wisconsin was enormous. And some people even were not farmers in the old country, but they recognized what the landscape had to offer.
Yeah, and you've got some wonderful quotes about that. I think what struck me a lot was the cooperation. I mean, the first people here had pretty tough...
They did. It was brutal. I mean, it really was brutal for the first white settlers to arrive here. And often those very first people would get up some kind of a rude shelter, or in some cases even a dugout. And it was already tiny and cold and drafty. And then if more people arrived, whether they knew them or not, almost always... You open the door, and people talk about so many people were sleeping on the floor of a tiny cabin that nobody could get up until, you know, everybody got up. There was no walking space. And I've read about people talking about a husband and wife sleeping in a bed, and another couple would scoot under the bed on the floor because that was the only place for them to sleep. And on these brutal cold winter days especially, imagine all those people trying to crowd around a wood stove and keep the wood stove hot.
And keep it going.
And if you didn't have matches, you really had to be careful about keeping it going. There's amazing stories of people whose fires went out and they had no option except to go hike to the next neighbor's house and try to get a live coal back to their own stove in order to get it started again.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Joanne and Shell Lake, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a great story I have to tell you about my great-grandma. She married this guy, and she moved down to Texas with him. And he was an alcoholic and kind of mean. So one day he went into town, and she decided she was going to leave. And she hooked up her covered wagon, and she took... I don't know if she had oxen or cows, but anyway, she had something she could hook up to the wagon. She took her three kids and started for Wisconsin. And halfway through, when the covered wagons would come to a stream, they would tie their wagons together so they wouldn't wash down the stream.
Yeah.
Well, she had a calf that she was going to sell for flour and sugar, and the calf got off of the wagon and floated downstream.
Oh, my gosh.
And she said, "I need that calf." And they said, "No, you let him go. He's going to drown. We have to keep moving." And she said, "No, I'm going to stay back." So she stayed back, went downstream, got the calf, put him back in her wagon, and continued her way up to Wisconsin.
That is a magnificent story. What a strong woman.
Yes, she was, and she was a little German woman, really small, but she came up to Bagley, Wisconsin. Now, I have, my maiden name is Bagley, and I think maybe my great-grandpa gave the land to the city of Bagley, although I haven't checked into it. I've got to check into that. But it's such a great story, and she was such a great little lady. Didn't speak much English.
Well, I hope you're right. You've written all this down, Joanne.
Yes.
I'm sure, Kathleen, you were going to say the same thing.
I am. That's just a fabulous story about a strong woman.
And we have to take a quick break to take a look at the news. Joanne, I thank you so much for calling with that story. And I really do hope you write that down if you haven't written it down already. Kathleen Ernst, here's a great writer. She's written A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Seasons. We'll be back with her after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. As we take a look at a new book out by Kathleen Ernst, it's called A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Seasons. And she's an award-winning author. She's more than 30 mystery, historical fiction, and nonfiction books for adults and young readers. And her latest book, again, is A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Seasons. You may have some questions for her about her book, or about that time period. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Kathleen, we've had some nice comments from people. That was a great story. that we the woman
it
told
us marvelous
just before our news break about her great great grandmother. I think
it's just so inspiring to think about people like her ancestor who just did what they needed to do, and for her to leave an abusive husband and make the trip with her children alone to Wisconsin, it's hard for us to even imagine today. Strong, strong woman.
We have. We also had a comment from Liz in Waukesha. I wanted to thank you for keeping history alive with a book like this. She said, I have a four-year-old son, and I think it's so important to make sure that kids stay in touch with history.
Oh, thank you, Liz. That's very kind. And I hope you can take him out to Old World, Wisconsin, or one of the other historic sites, perhaps in a year or two when he's a little older.
Maybe talk a little bit about Old World, Wisconsin, a bit more.
Well, Old World, Wisconsin is really a very special place. It's one of the largest museums in the country, outdoor museums. It includes 60 historic structures on 576 acres within the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And it opened in 1976 as a bicentennial project and continues to grow. And one of the things that made me fall in love with the site is the landscape architects and historians who created the museum back in the 1970s, did such a magnificent job of spreading it out within the state forest. So you can walk into one of the restored farm kitchens and look out the window and see a kitchen garden and then see a field of wheat and then see perhaps woods or a prairie patch beyond that. So it's a wonderful place to really help you imagine what life was like. And there are also lots of many hands-on activities and opportunities to get kids excited about history, which is fantastic.
And I want to go back because there people may be just tuning in to talk about the book itself, A Settler's Year, gives us a nice history of the time period that A Settler's Year talks about.
I hope it really does provide a glimpse of what people's lives were like during the pioneer era in Wisconsin, which sort of the pioneer era sort of moved northward as people settled up. So people were well settled in much of southern Wisconsin while people were still just getting started in northern Wisconsin. But there's so much more to the story than just the agricultural chores. It does talk a lot about the relationship between settlers and how they did cooperate and help each other. And certainly there were opportunities for some conflict, too, sometimes between perhaps ethnic groups. But the most heartening stories were just how common it was for people to help each other out. And also, in really some pretty brutal circumstances sometimes, people still did what they could to have some fun. They would get together for an evening of storytelling if there was nothing else that they could do that winter to pass time. Or they would just help each other with chores just so they had some company. So I find these stories really quite inspiring.
I do as well. And I really like how, as you talked about earlier, how the book, you've organized the book kind of through the season. So we start with spring. Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Spring, summer, fall, and then winter, and really the whole dynamics of life changed with every season, didn't they?
They did, and for most of us today, we're fairly divorced from the natural world, even if we love to go hiking or camping. You know, we live in climate-controlled buildings, and today more people live in urban areas than on farms, but a century and more ago, these people were just so attuned to the natural world, and that's why we did include a few photographs in each section of the natural world that Lloyd experienced out at Old World, Wisconsin, the bird songs and the changing leaves and things like that, because this was their world. Even people living in little one-room cabins, the climate, despite the wood stove, was often very much indoors and out, pretty similar. So it's, I think it, the pictures in particular, as well as some of the stories told in the book, can help us modern people imagine what it was like.
Oh, yeah, this is absolutely wonderful photos to go along with it. Let's talk about some of those individual things, like cooking, for example. Cooking was, well, like baking, for example, was a real challenge, as you write about.
It was. It's such a staple, and people really needed bread, and often that was some kind of bread product might be all they had. But often when the families arrived, they might need to camp for a while before they could get set up. And so first, a woman might be baking outdoors on some kind of perhaps a griddle or a little fry pan propped up on the rocks. Some of the earliest cabins did not have wood stoves. That would have been a luxury. And so there'd be some kind of open fireplace in the cabin. And that would have been, of course, quite smoky.
Smoky
yeah. all the time. Hopefully had a good mason to help with the chimney, but often it was very smoky. And then also think about the need to actually have grain. Often people didn't have enough grain to bake every week yeah. as they were used to. And there are amazing stories of women and men who would hike for miles to a flour mill and then carry home a huge sack of flour on their back because they did not have a cart. They didn't have an ox yet. And that was because they just desperately needed that fundamental staff of life, bread.
And if they had the grain, they had to grind it by hand.
They often had to grind it by hand. If there was, again, for those early settlers, the closest mill might have been too far away to get to. So women were grinding in coffee mills or whatever they could find.
And coffee mills, when you mentioned coffee mills, coffee was another. How was the coffee made back then? There were, weren't the roasted peas even used?
Sometimes, yeah, parched peas as a coffee substitute. I've never tried that, so I'm not sure how that would taste. I suspect it would be a poor substitute for most of us today. And, of course, different people from different ethnic groups brought their own traditions, and I'm sure some of the Scandinavians were very happy when they finally had a chicken and could make their good egg coffee again, as they were used to doing. But, yeah, just the simplest basic things took an enormous amount of work.
What was egg coffee like?
Oh, egg coffee is magnificent.
Oh!
Yeah, you make coffee in a coffee pot. You gently break an egg, clean egg, shell and all, and mix the egg very gently into the grounds. And right before the coffee would start to boil, you pull it off the heat, and the egg just takes all the bitterness out of the coffee. It's really good.
So you've done this.
I have. When I worked at Old World Wisconsin, that's when I was introduced to egg coffee.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking today with Kathleen Ernst about her book, A Settler's Year, and I'm having some fun doing this. You can join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences from your family to share. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, too. To do that, just go to The Larry Mueller Show. We had a Facebook comment from Buzz who said, I remember listening to the old-timers on the prairies of North Dakota and Montana that everything they did was to prepare for the next winter and the battling of the wind.
Yes, and imagine a family with that winter sort of looming, and you're looking at your children, and you're looking at your crops, and you're looking what you have, and that sinking feeling that you must have if you think, boy, this is going to be tight. You know, have we preserved enough? Have we grown enough? Do we have enough to get us through the winter? And if you had a very long winter, it would have been very scary to watch those supplies dwindle.
Oh, and if you didn't have the you know, the ability to hunt.
Right. Yeah. And often, I mean, some of the very early people came literally with nothing. They didn't all have guns. They didn't all have cash to even buy land at first. And that those first winters, I love the comment about the wind, because often people didn't have anything to do. I mean, there were chores, getting firewood, for example, and a lot of people in the winter would cut wood and sell it. It was like a cash crop at the time. But for the most part, you didn't have a lot to do all winter long, and no wool to spin, no spinning wheel, no books to read, perhaps. Perhaps you're not even living in a cabin yet. Perhaps you're in a dugout with a group of people, some you might know and some you might not know, because they just arrived and needed a place to stay, with nothing to do but listen to the wind. It must have been very, very difficult.
I couldn't even imagine what it must have been like. And those homes, I think when the homes were built, as you write about, often the first thing that was taken care of was the livestock.
Yes. And the Europeans in particular were very focused on that. They had made this enormous sacrifice of leaving their family, their community, and they did this because they wanted to start a farm of their own. And it, often in places in Europe, laws prohibited people from even having land of their own. And so this was huge for Europeans. And they did not have the mentality of, oh, we'll do what we can, and if we don't like it here, we'll move on. You know, they had made this huge decision. Yeah. They wanted to find the best piece of land they could afford. Something with lots of resources, wood as well as some open land, was ideal for the Europeans. And if they could invest money in a pig or a cow, they were certainly going to take care of it. And there's at least one photo in the book that shows a one-room cabin. It's a Norwegian cabin with a little pen inside, because if your baby piglets were born when it was still cold outside, you didn't take chances with that. You brought them inside so that they would be warm, too.
And I remember you pointing out or a quote from a farmer who said, well, I was worried about the milk freezing in the cow, so the first thing we built was a place to take care of the cows.
Take care of the cows. And that was, it's sort of a stereotype, but a lot of the Europeans remarked that the Yankees, which were people moving from New England primarily, they might focus first on building a newer house. And the Europeans tend to say, well, we'll stay in this tiny little cabin. I want to get my barn up first.
Yeah, absolutely. We have more comments. You can join in. We've got lots of people here online, and we'll go to those in just a minute. But the number again to call, 1-800-642-1234. What was education like? For those early settlers, school for kids, was there really a school for kids?
In the earliest years, it was hit and miss. If there was nothing available, often women would homeschool, and people would cooperate within a tiny little community. Often people, they did value education very much, and they would get a school up as soon as they could. It depended a lot on the agricultural seasons, because often kids would go to school in the middle of winter and in the middle of summer,
yeah,
but not in spring or fall, because those are the busiest times on the farm.
Yeah, that's when you're planting, or mm-hmm, that's when you're harvesting.
Right,
right.
So the
spring,
kids,
harvesting in fall.
The kids would have to be home helping out with that.
So it's kind of the opposite almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Of what we have today. Dick and Viola, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi, I got a question about the book. Does it touch upon the settlers' treatment of the Native Americans and how they were treated so terribly?
Oh, thanks for calling in, Dick. I only make one reference to that in the introduction, because that's really not the focus of this particular book. But I did want to touch on that. And one of the settlers, even as happy as he was to be finding such wonderful resources, he was well aware of the fact that for him to find a home, it meant displacing other peoples from their home. And I also just wanted to point out, I often say that these stories have relevance for almost everyone, because, for example, the Menominee people have always lived where they live today, or very close to where they live today. So I don't want to send the message that everyone has immigrated to this area, because that's not true.
Thank you
for
calling. Yes, Sue in Oakfield, it's your turn next. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say I'm very interested in this topic, and always have been since I've been a little girl, believe it or not. But I'm going through some of the, the religious cards from obituaries and such, and mm-hmm, how they were back then. Okay, well, come to find out that my great-grandfather was an original settler of Sheboygan County.
Oh, how special.
Yeah, yes. And in the obituary, it said something about him, clearing virgin timber. And he had, they had 13 children. And
wow,
when they got over here, there was only 9 at the time. But even traveling, they came from Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
Yeah. Isn't that something, it's a country you don't hear much about.
That's fascinating. And I also think, if he's clearing timber, often the Europeans wanted wooded land because they didn't have wood in the old country, but imagine how hard it was to clear timber in those days, especially if all you had was your own muscle.
Yeah, that's exactly what my husband and I are doing in northern Wisconsin right now, but... And just a comment, too. I do find it fascinating the information you can find out through, churches or, the traveling ministers or such.
Yes.
They're such a wealth of information in that. But anyway, that's what I wanted to share with you. Oh, his name was Henry Stellan.
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much.
I love hearing these stories.
Yeah, absolutely. We have probably another story here from Marty in Bayfield. Hi, Marty.
Hello there. I just had a quick anecdote I wanted to pass on. The school that's in Old World, Wisconsin, originally came from Bayfield County, if what I've been told is correct.
The Raspberry School, yes.
Yes, exactly. And my grandmother went to school there.
Oh, my.
And I have someplace slides of it in the original setting. I've been in it when it was in this clearing set against some woods. Probably had to be 40-plus years ago now, I guess. It was pretty dilapidated, but you could go in it. And it was still there, at least anyway, and it was ultimately transferred down to Old World, Wisconsin.
Well, if you ever find them, I would be thrilled to see a copy of the picture. You can always reach me through my website, which is KathleenErnst.com. I had a chance to visit the site of that school once with Elsie Peterson, who was one of the original children that went to the schoolhouse, which was very, very special. But, of course, the building was already down at Old World by then.
Very, very cool.
Thank you so much,
Marty. I want to give Gladys a chance to call from or join us from Eagle. Hi, Gladys.
Hi, Larry. I have two comments. The first is I so enjoyed the mysteries about Old World, Wisconsin.
Thank you, Gladys.
About 7 years ago, and am recognizing the streets and the names of the places that are mentioned in the book, which is just wonderful. And second of all, we have been prepping our older granddaughter to go to Old World for a couple of years by reading books about pioneers, and she's watched some of the old Little House on the Prairie shows.
Oh, wonderful.
And this summer, she's eight, this summer we took her to Old World and got there when it opened and had to drag her out at 5 o'clock.
Isn't that wonderful?
It was amazing, and it happened to be Laura Ingalls Wilder's Days.
Oh, yes.
And I had just given her one of those books to read. So she was so into it. She made her own wooden nail at the wagon master shop. She carded wool. She made cookies at the Polish house and cookies at the Irish house.
That's wonderful.
It was just an amazing day. I recommend this to every grandparent.
Oh, thank you so much, both for taking her and for helping her get prepared for that, but for sharing your story, because as kids, we worry about our children and grandchildren getting more and more disconnected from the past, and a historic site like Old World, Wisconsin, or any of the other wonderful historic sites in the state,
yeah,
it's a great place for it to become real for them, I think, hands-on history.
Your new book, and I missed the first part of your show today, will that be something I can read to her or with her?
I would say absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of fun. Believe me, you're going
to
have a lot of fun with this book, Gladys.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Kathleen.
Oh, Gladys, thanks so much for calling.
Oh, yeah, boy, talk about a book where you can actually share.
Yeah. You can really read this, I think, on different levels. I mean, with a young child, you can just work through the pictures because the photographs are so magnificent. And then depending on the reading level of the child, but there's really nothing in the book that you couldn't talk about, that you couldn't share with them and read with a child.
And virtually every photo in here has a cut line a paragraph that explains what's going on with the with the book, so
yeah, the photographs in each chapter in each section really tell their own story. They're arranged in that way.
Yeah, it's just great. How's the book doing, by the way? You've had it out. It's been out for a little while.
It's been out for a little while. The press actually was able to get it out a little earlier, and I've been thrilled with the initial response. The book was chosen to represent Wisconsin at the Library of Congress's National Book Festival in September, which was quite a thrill. I'm so honored by that.
That's wonderful.
And the National Archives in D.C. has also invited me to give a program about this book and the topic as part of their noon lecture series on October 19th. So the Library of Congress and the National Archives, I just could not be more thrilled and honored, not so much for my part in this, but just I think Old World Wisconsin and historic sites deserve a bigger audience. And the stories that are told here of the immigrants, I'm just thrilled that they're going to get out to a larger audience.
Great stories, Kathleen, and thank you so much for talking with us about
them. It's always a pleasure to be here, Larry. Thank you.
She'll be back. Kathleen Ernst, the author of the latest book that she's written, A Settler's Year, Pioneer Life Through the Seasons. I know she's got some more Chloe Ellefson mysteries coming up,
I
will be talking with her about those as well. In the meantime, G, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk insects tomorrow with PJ Leash. But stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a whole lot more to come throughout the afternoon and evening.